This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We got Ryan Roland Smith in for Dave Wyman today. It's been a lot of fun having you in, Ryan. I could talk baseball all day long, every day. I could just, I know you, you know how it is with me. I could just pepper you with questions and you'll eventually just go, okay, Bob, enough. I've got nothing left.
I need to start talking some football though. I'm ready.
You got football questions? You got football thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Hey, listen, every winter I say to myself, all right, let's dial in. We'll start watching the Seahawks. I'll throw Dave Wyman a few text messages and say, hey, listen, man, I'm going to hit you up with all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, life gets in the way, and I'm off to Australia for a few weeks, and I just lose it. I lose the I'm just not following it the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you. It's hard. You're a busy guy. You're in demand. I mean, you're on the MLB Network. You're here hosting. You're on Root Sports. You're going to Australia. You're a guy in demand. It's hard.
I'm trying, man.
I'm
the hardest.
Well, we're taking a look at some things going on around the world of baseball, and the A's have reached, this is a story I saw last night, they've reached a tentative agreement with Nevada State and local officials on a stadium funding plan. Apparently, they've been in negotiations for weeks on how much public assistance the state's going to give to a $1.5 billion ballpark in Vegas. So it's between the A's, the governor's office, state treasurer, blah, blah, blah. So everything's moving forward. It looks like, you know, hey, they're on their way to Vegas, and you feel bad for the fans in Oakland because everybody mocks that. I've never been to that stadium, by the way, but I've never heard one good word about it from anybody that's been as a fan, anybody that's played there, anybody that's been. They say the neighborhood stinks, the building stinks, the accommodations stink. Like, there's no redeeming qualities to the building, and it just. It's lousy for the fans that would tough it out. They would still show up to the games no matter how good or bad they were and, you know, sit out there and make noise, beating the drums and doing their thing out there, and they're going to lose their team now.
I will say this, how bad the Coliseum is. There's some really good people who work for that organization, and I feel really bad for them. Even when I've got, like, my Australian kids who come over, you know, from Australia, and, like, you know, if they're doing, like, a baseball tour or a showcase or something, and we're in Northern California, I can reach out to the Oakland A's, and they'll literally bring out the GM. The kids can go on the field. I'll talk to, you know, David Forst, for example, or whoever, and just hang out. It's so good. It's amazing. I feel bad for it. It's such a bad situation. Not only that, you look at this stuff with what's happening with them moving to Vegas. It's not like they're moving there in 2 months. You know, it's going to take a long time. So you're going to see what we're seeing these last couple of days and the historic low of the Oakland A's for more than – it's going to be a couple years' worth of this. Because they just have – there's just straight, you know what, I'm just going to let this ride. The ship has sailed. Obviously, they're going to Nevada. They know that. That's where their head's at. And there's just no – in the next year or so, and you think about the players right now starting their career there in Oakland, there's no game plan besides, hey, let's just get to Vegas and then we'll kick off this magical new place. It's insane. It's crazy.
Well, you got to believe, Ryan, that you know you're going to get a $1.5 billion stadium. I mean, you're talking state of the art, new city, trying to generate excitement about the product. They have no choice but to invest in their product now, right? You can't go into Vegas with this whole new deal and all of the fanfare and this brand new building and say, yeah, we're going to spend $42 million on our roster. You can't do it, right? Does this not put pressure on ownership to say, okay, those days are gone? Now it's time to start investing in your roster and giving people a reason to go see this team.
Well, that's just it, right? I mean, okay, the Oakland A's, and you go back to when, you know, the what's it, the Bay Series or whatever, and they had the earthquake and the Canseco days and Ricky Henderson. That, you know, the history of the team, and they made Hollywood movies out of it, the whole Moneyball scene. What are you going to do, switch your business model as soon as you get to Vegas? That's like, or are you just going to keep the same business model where we're just going to be cheap? We're going to be the Oakland A's.
You can't
we're
do
have that.
That
identity.
You can't.
You can't.
There's
got
to be. I've got to believe behind the scenes, there's got to be some assurances from this ownership group to the city saying, hey, yeah, we know we're going to get public funding. We're going to get an investment from the city, the state, in this new $1.5 billion stadium. We've got to do our part. There's got to be, I would have to believe that the officials or whoever's in charge of making those decisions that says, all right, we're doing this for you. Here's the land. We're doing all, we're working together. you're going to put a representative product on the field, or you're going to try. You're not going to the penny pinching stops here.
But they embrace that, and they we spoke to Grant yesterday, and Grant said, look, we have money to spend. We don't need to. And honestly, that's how it was. Grant won't say that publicly, but that's how it was because, hey, by the way, the last 20 years, they've made the playoffs 11 of those 20 years.
Yeah.
They have some success. They know what they're doing. But at the same time, if you're an A's fan, now you're out there in Oakland, and that's a different culture to what you're going to get in Vegas because it's going to be this multi-trillion-dollar stadium with like a roof that I don't know what they're going to have down there. It's all kinds of I'm just trying to think of something ridiculous that those stadiums will have. I've got nothing. I'm blanking for some reason.
You came up empty?
I came up empty. Can you believe it? But then all of a sudden, you're going to have this front office and this ownership that's been the whole culture, and that's kind of how they've done things. It's just it's going to be interesting. And I need to ask you this too. Speaking of football, okay, the Oakland Raiders – what was their model? Like, how did they go about things when they're in the Coliseum as opposed to what they did when they got to Vegas? Did all of a sudden their whole, business model change of how they do, how they get players, free agents?
No, not that I didn't follow the Raiders closely enough to pay attention to how they spent their money, but you're dealing with salary cap in the NFL and everybody's sort of on an even playing field. It's not like a Yankees situation or a Mets where one team, the Patriots can go spend $500 million, but this team can only spend, $120 million or whatever. There's much more parity. Everybody's working up to a certain limit. So what their philosophy was in Oakland versus Vegas, I don't really know. But in terms of spending, it's a different model. Whereas baseball, you've got teams like the A's that are making money, not from attendance, not from parking and concessions, from revenue sharing, from the big clubs. They're getting a cut of what the Yankees, and from luxury tax, the competitive balance tax. They're getting cuts of all that. These teams that don't spend any money are getting money from the big teams, yet they're not putting it back into their product. They're putting it into their pocket.
Well, the other part of this is too, Rob Manfred, and I'm looking this up. I can't remember the exact day, but he basically said, unless you come up with a decision here, you're not going to get the revenue sharing in regards to, if you cannot come up with a new stadium or a decision on where you're going to be located, you're not going to get that revenue share. And that happened during the last CBA. So obviously that pushed the Oakland A's to come up with, make a decision. And there was just nothing budging. Some of these plans they had, and this is what drives me nuts from a fan's point of view. They'd bring out these, models. And this was to put pressure on the government, on the local government there and the council and everything else. And the mayor, they had that waterfront property. And they put these renderings out of it online to say, oh, look at this, to sort of push, to put pressure on the local, on the government there. But the fans get that and they get excited. Say, oh yeah, great, we're staying in Oakland, but it's all just a load of rubbish, just trying to get people stimulated to try and make something happen.
Yeah,
that's just the whole thing. It was such a done deal, man. When you've got a situation where the Las Vegas is just dying for a team. Hey, we'll cut every little bit of red tape for you to make this streamline and everything else. And this was happening years ago. Here they are. And they knew that too, Matt, because Manfred said, listen, come up with a decision or you're not going to get that revenue share, which you mentioned that baseball's a little bit of a flawed system there when you talk about profits and winning, winning equals profits. It's not the case in baseball. We know that.
Yeah.
Teams make money even if they don't win. And the Oakland A's, like you said, same deal.
Hey, this other story I thought was really interesting. I wanted to get your take on this. Johan Duran hit 104.6 miles per hour on the radar gun. This is he threw three pitches, 104 miles per hour or faster. The Twins win over the Giants on Wednesday. Yesterday, 7-1, they win. So he had three pitches over 104, including 104.6. It's the fastest pitch in Major League Baseball this season. The previous high was 103.8 by Jordan Hicks and Aroldis Chapman back on May 16th. So seeing this, and it's becoming more and more common. Triple digits is almost not a huge deal anymore. We still look at it and go, oh, wow, 100, okay. But it happens a lot. It happens a lot. And it's so different from when you were pitching before you were, you know, 95 was considered a flamethrower. Yeah. And how do you see that? I mean, are we going to be talking in 10 years and somebody's going to hit 110? Are we going to, are they going to eventually have to move the mound back a little bit? Or what? I'm being serious. How do you?
I know. And you know what? You go back, and I hear you go back like, I'd say 3 or 5 years. I had this conversation with, you know, Tom House, for example, who's big pitching guru, and he was, Tom House was obsessed with velocity before everyone else was obsessed with velocity on how to get it, where, like, what generates velocity, all this stuff, like even technology to figure out what besides velocity matters and everything else. So we always would always have these conversations, right? So we look at, I look at it like, okay, there has to be a human threshold of what you can hit. And I always thought that that triple digits, 102 is like that, that 0.01% of human beings that are able to do it. Then all of a sudden you kind of hit this threshold where humanly possible, you just cannot throw harder than that. It's just, I put in the same sort of conversation as Usain Bolt running 100 meters. Mm-hmm. The world record, like you look at the 100 meter sprint, and it's not like in 10 years, I might be wrong, that someone's going to be running the 100-meter sprint in 7.8 seconds or something ridiculous. So I just, I'm on the fence about this. At what point is it that humanly possible threshold? Because the way it kind of, it went from, like you said, it wasn't so much, people were throwing 100 miles per hour, you know, 10, even 20 years ago. I remember rookie ball, we had a guy, Jorge Sosa, throwing 100 and hitting 101. Right, and that was back in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he was, that was it. There was him and three other people on the planet doing that. Now it's a boatload of guys. So you start to see all of a sudden just this chunk of human beings able to all do the same thing, figuring out how to train to get there. And then there's that outlier, like we're seeing this kid now, Duran, now throwing 105. And then a whole chunk of other guys got 105. I just don't know what the threshold of human possibility is. It's just, it's wild, man. Maybe we will say 110. I used to say no. I said, no, we've kind of hit that threshold now from human beings, but maybe we can. I mean, have no idea. It's
I insane. Don't know. It feels like, you know, people just get, especially athletes, they get bigger, they get stronger, they get faster, yeah. They get, you know, you look at the size of players today in the NFL versus the size of players back when Dave was playing. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's a different game, and I think it's true for baseball. I don't know what the physical limits are of the human body, but I don't know. I think if we were talking even 10 years ago about a guy hitting almost 105 on the radar gun, you'd be like, come on, now you're being silly. And just, they've got a list here, Ryan. I don't know if you saw the article, but pitchers to reach 104 plus miles per hour in the pitch tracking era. Aroldis Chapman has done it 67 times. Jordan Hicks has done it 12 times. Duran, 3 times. Ryan Helsley has done it twice. And then they've got Mauricio Cabrera, Camilo Duvall, Teron Guerrero, and then Neftali Feliz, all pitchers who have done it at least once. And then in the case of Chapman, 67 times.
It's crazy.
He's hit at least 104.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. Like, what do you do? Move the mound back? Or,
well, they've talked about moving the mound back. That's been an idea that's been floated out there before.
Move.
That would drag
everything. I'm not trying to be, you know, when they brought that up, I'm like, that is just, it's just a bad move. Really is a bad move.
Yeah.
For so many different reasons. I don't know if we have time to dive into it that much, but man, but what do you do? I mean, if guys are on 110, hitters will adjust. Yeah, sure, but
yeah,
you can't
I don't
adjust
know.
That much.
I don't love dealing with the dimensions of the field. I don't like messing with that. And I know the larger bases did it to an extent, you know, but it shortened the distance between first and second, second and third by a couple of inches. But if we start saying, all right, the mound 60 feet, 6 inches, now we want it to be, I don't know what they were proposing, 62 feet, 64 feet, whatever it is. I don't know what they want. I don't like it. I like leave the dimensions alone on the infield. Leave it alone. You want to mess with the outfield. It's different in every stadium. I get it. But yeah, I don't love it either. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. I just think baseball, the dimensions were just like, it worked perfectly for so long. But now all of a sudden you got these cats throwing 110. You're like, all right.
I wonder how long it'll be. Someday somebody will hit 110. I don't know if it's 5 years from now. Maybe it's 3 years. Maybe it's 10 years. I don't know. But
and by the way, MLB proposed a two feet shift.
So
back.
62 That's, feet, 6 inches?
Yeah, and then they said 61 and a half feet was going to be that interval first. Oh, man, please don't. It's just weird, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, this other story I saw, and it made me think about this. Mike Trout hit a home run, and he passed Joe DiMaggio on the all-time home run list. Let's see, career number 362. So... And I feel like because Trout, you know, he had the calf injury, what was last year, missed a whole bunch of time. He's back now. You look at his numbers, he's Mike Trout. Maybe the average isn't quite where it normally is. But this is a guy we talked about as Mickey Mantle, as this generation's Mickey Mantle and a generational talent. And have we kind of lost sight of him while we're talking about Ohtani and we're talking about Julio out here and you're talking about Soto and Bryce Harper? It feels like everybody else is sort of taking up the spotlight and – You don't hear much about Trout. I mean, yeah, you'll see a highlight. Yeah, he hit a home run. But in terms of just talking about, did you see what this guy did or what that guy did? I feel like the spotlight has been moved elsewhere.
Yeah, I agree with you. Now, as far as how good he's been, how consistent he's been and everything else, I mean, again, you look at I even talk about Clayton Kershaw like that too. Clayton Kershaw will have a 2.5 and everyone's like, oh, yeah. Whatever. It's like you just kind of get used to it.
Yeah.
Because he's not throwing 100. You know what I'm saying? Or his breaking ball's not the same, but he's finding ways to this, the latter part of his career, he's still put up the same numbers he did 10 years ago. I think with Mike Trout, sometimes it's like, it's just kind of a given. Like, oh, yeah, well, that's Mike Trout. And then he's on the same team as Shohei Ohtani, who's fascinating, fascinating player because he does both and everything else. But, man, again, if you have forgotten about him, go take a look at these numbers. It's just that's all I'll say. It's crazy. It's year after year after year. And also too, by the way, you look at guys usually not at this point in their career, still young. I mean he's 31 years old, but sprint speed, he's still up there in the top 5% in sprint speed. You look at your barrel percentage, some of the athletic numbers. He's still super athletic. It's not a Miguel Cabrera where he's hit the spread a little bit too hard and he's not the same dynamic guy on the bases. You know what I'm saying? You remember Miguel Cabrera when he was in the Florida uniform?
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
He just completely changed. He's still a masher. He's still one of the best players in the game. But Mike Trout still has that youthful athleticism about him at 31.
Yeah, it just feels like he's kind of taking a back seat to all the Juan Soto and Tatis, and we're talking about Machado and Aaron Judge, and we're just
the let the kids play flashy, wearing the custom Jordans and those WWE M frame Oakleys. I agree with you 100%.
Hey, this other story, I'm wondering how you feel about this. Carlos Correa was one of the big – this was the big shortstop offseason with Dansby Swanson, Xander Bogaerts, Trey Turner. We talked about it over and over. Correa was out there and had a deal in place, and then it got screwed up because there was injury concerns and all that. He goes back to Minnesota, and it hasn't gone well. I mean, he's hitting .213 with 6 home runs, 24 runs driven in, 14 runs scored in 44 games, and now he's got another injury, a foot injury that could land him on the IL. He had an MRI, said he's got a muscle strain in the arch of his left foot in addition to plantar fasciitis in his heel. Is this gonna end up being a terrible deal for the Twins?
That was what it was, right? It was the foot or the ankle or the heel or whatever
It was a foot injury. I don't know if it's the same one, but that was the one that screwed up things with the Giants, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there was, by the way, real quick, there's a funny meme of him saying Merry Christmas with this giant boot on his foot. Like, it was like Photoshop. It was so good. Oh, my God, I loved it. If I had it in front of me, I'd send it to you. I was dying laughing over that. It was like around Christmas time. But it's weird, man, because the Twins are kind of a little bit more conservative when you talk about going out and having it feeling like they're desperate to just deal with the injuries to go and spend money, kind of like the Texas Rangers. They're a little bit different in regards to that. But they knew him. They had him the year prior, and they're like, this is something we can live with. But it's come back to bite them. It really has. Because there's obviously something pretty severe there. And again, we spoke to Balfour the other day. He dealt with that where the Orioles had a deal in place with Grant Balfour to sign a multi-year deal, did the MRI, looked at his shoulder and elbow and said, nope, deal's done. It got voided because of the MRI. And Grant was furious about that, and he went on to pitch, and he was fine. He went on to, you know, pitch for 2 years injury-free. But that's something that when you look at that as a team, a lot of teams see it, and they're like, eh, we can deal with this. There was multiple teams that said, we can't deal with this. This is not going to bode well. And they're talking about 2-3 years down the track, not now. So it's kind of crazy that now the Twins are dealing with this. Plus, they're starting to struggle too as a team.
Yeah, you look at his numbers and games played and things like that. His best season in terms of games played was his second season, 2016, played 153 games. But since then, 109, 110, 75, 58 in the pandemic year, 148 his final year with Houston, and then 136 last year with the Twins, and now we'll see what happens with him. But just a guy who's not old, but he's not a young guy anymore. He's going to be 29 in September. So he signs that massive deal. You just wonder,
six years, 200.
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
Yeah, you wonder if this is going to come back and bite him, because it's not working right now. Okay, coming up, Bryce Miller is already making MLB history. We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob. We got Ryan Roland-Smith in today. This is SeattleSports.com and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Coming up at 5 o'clock, John Morosi will join us on the program. Make sure you stay tuned for that conversation. Always a lot of fun. Ryan Roland-Smith in with us today. We'll be out there at Edgar's tomorrow. So should be a beautiful. It's supposed to be like 80 degrees tomorrow, man. It's going to be hot.
No, I'm going to have to drop by tomorrow. I'm doing color tomorrow in the booth, so I'm going to have to come to get my spirits up, come hang out with you guys for a second.
Yeah, come on, hang out. Don't wear your suit, though. It's going to be way too hot for that out there.
You know he will. Aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I wear the full suit when I drop the kids off at school. No chance. Amanda's like, oh, you got to pick up the dress code a little bit when you're not at the stadium as well, because it's pretty bad.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's days I'm like, yeah, I need to clean it up a little bit. Yeah,
you got to pick up the dress code. I love it. It's so great. All right. Well, yeah, come on by. You're always with. The door is always open for you, Ryan. Whenever you want to come by, you are welcome. So we'll be out there at Edgar's tomorrow. Hopefully we'll see a lot of you out there. Beautiful day for baseball. It's going to be supposed to be hot and sunny, and the Pirates will be in town. So it should be a fun time out there. Meanwhile, Bryce Miller did what we thought he would do and we're hoping he would do last night, and that's dominate the A's. So looking at what he did, six innings, no runs, one walk. I mean, he just electric stuff out there. Scott Service after the game talking about him and just giving his thoughts on the overall outing here.
There's going to be some adjustments he's going to need to make along the way. Yeah. The more teams get to see him and the book gets on him a little bit more. But, you know, if it ain't broke, you don't fix it. Yeah. And the results are outstanding. The thing that has not changed at all is just obviously the confidence he has. When he takes the mound, he is in total control. It's about as slow as heartbeat you're ever going to see from a young starting pitcher, and it serves him well. I think, you know, there's going to be nights that he's going to have to lean on the off-speed pitches a little bit more, but really good so far.
I don't know if his heartbeat is slower than Kirby's. You got two very calm guys in that rotation right there, man.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think with, you know, Bryce Miller, when you can throw just 80% fastball, it's kind of like Little League. You know, like if you throw harder or you're like a foot bigger than all the other kids throwing from that distance, you just pump fastballs by everyone. I don't know if that was ever you. I think I was one stage I was able to do that for a second.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. And it's just for him, I don't know if this is going to be a detriment as the season goes on, because it is going to get tougher for him. Not to be a wet blanket here, but like he's probably rolling, he's probably driving home after the game last night going, man, this is kind of easy. You know, I was thinking that last night, like his demeanor when he walks off the mound, he's kind of got this look on his face like, this is it? Yeah. Like I thought I was told all these tales from all these salty vets in AAA, like, or AA, wherever he was at before this. Hey, man, if you throw that pitch in the big leagues, just get shelled. You know, what you're doing down here is not going to work up in the show. You know, you hear all that. And he's just kind of rolling out and just pumping cheese past everyone. Yeah. It's unreal.
Well, they talked about him in his very first start before he was, you know, when he was just walking around in the clubhouse, that he had his mitt on his head and he's just walking around, just kind of oblivious, man. Just like,
speaking of that, And you reminded me of something too, and this is the difference. We had, you know, spoke to Balfour yesterday about the difference in the game and the how people are these days compared to, you know, back when we played, you know, doing the old get off my lawn routine here in a second. But, dude, the day he got called up, he was doing some TikTok video where, like, you know those videos on TikTok, all the kids these days, they do this video where they're, like, they're wearing, like, regular clothes and they snap their fingers and then, boom, the video switches to them, you know, wearing different clothes or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's doing this TikTok video, and I don't know if he's in the clubhouse here or in Arizona, where, like, he's wearing regular clothes, and he does, like, a little somersault on the ground, and he's in his baseball uni. And I'm like, dude, there is no way, no chance. Back in 2007, when I rolled into T-Mobile or Safeco Field back in the day, if I did that, I would have the veteran players would have duct taped me into my locker and just slapped me in the face.
I just left you there.
It's so different now. I mean, yeah, how confident, comfortable do you got to be able to throw up a TikTok video like that?
Yeah, maybe they're just so comfortable and calm, just like, yeah, whatever. It's a video. That's what we do. I'm fine. Yeah, it's just, it's been fun to watch. And I like, do you think Scott, you heard him in the very beginning of that, like, well, he's going to have to make some adjustments when the league gets the book on him. And do you think he consciously has to not gush? Like, he can praise him, but he's got to be careful of, oh, man, can you, but he can't be like us. He can't be, did you see what was going on with that fastball? You see the movement? Yeah. You see what he's doing here with the spin rate? I mean, he can to an extent, and he does to an extent, but you hear that kind of, sort of cautious, like, all right, let's not get ahead of ourselves. He's going to have to adjust. The league's going to get the book on him kind of thing. Do you, you think that's a manager going, yeah, I can't, you know, get this guy's head too big, because there is going to be a rough night out there for him where he gives up a five spot and goes, you know, two innings or something.
Well, a couple of things to think about there with Scott Service. I guarantee in the back of his head, he's thinking, okay, now how am I going to manage this once we get into the month of August? He's 24 years old. He's never had this workload. He's mentioned this a few times, talking about the day's rest in between his starts. Last night we saw him, now he threw 90 pitches, threw 102 in Atlanta, threw 90 pitches. So they already were going to have to, you know, limit the amount of pitches anyway. So if he had battled through the first couple innings, you could have seen him go five, you know, maybe even taken out earlier. They're going to do that anyway. The other thing as well, and Bryce Miller mentioned this, he started to fatigue, get taxed a little bit in that last inning, in that sixth. The velo dropped, and all of a sudden he was like, oh, you know, I was starting to fatigue a little bit. So Scott Service, when he's talking and you're talking about him gushing and everything, I guarantee he's thinking to himself, man, fastball's great, but at some point in the season, we're going to have to manage this workload big time. And if he's doing what he's doing right now, this is going to be difficult. You know, George Kirby last year kind of made it easy. There was a couple starts there as we rolled into August where he was so efficient. He'd go six innings and only throw like 80 pitches. And so Scott Service was like, oh, well, thank you. It's going to be a little bit different with Bryce Miller. The other part of this is too, the fact that he doesn't have to throw the kitchen sink and come up with option A, B, C, and D in regards to pitch usage at this stage is great. That basically means that, you know what, I'll throw this fastball as long as it can. I can throw 80% until they catch up to it, and then I can throw my above-average slider and changeup as I get further into the season. As opposed to, man, he really has to be perfect, or he has to have four different options for these guys right out of the gates. So a couple of those things I think you think about, but I definitely feel like Scott Service understands that there's going to have to be a management aspect to this at some point.
Hey, which quickly before the break, which pitch was most taxing on your arm? Like you could only throw a few of the, was it breaking ball? Was it, I mean, it seems like the harder you try to throw, the more stress it puts on the elbow and the shoulder, but is it another pitch?
Yeah, curveball, 100%. Like, so remember last year, a year before that, Justin Dunn. Remember Justin Dunn?
Traded?
Yeah. So did you notice, and I didn't want to talk about this too much publicly, but Justin Dunn, they asked him, they said, listen, your usage has to change. He was throwing a lot of fastballs, and they said, we want you to throw way more breaking balls. So on paper, if you've never thrown, you look at that and say, oh, okay, we'll just adjust the usage. I'm going to change the usage here. I'm going to drop it down to, he was dropping down to like around 49, 50% fastballs, and then a ton of breaking balls. He was getting gassed. He would get to the third, fourth inning, and it wasn't because of stuff. Why? It wasn't because of stuff. It wasn't because of ability. He was getting exhausted. You could see it. And so the games where I was like, oh, my breaking ball is great early on, and now it keeps in the two get thrown down, two, because I had a big breaking ball, and I could throw it for strikes. I was like, I already knew in the back of my head, it's like, all right, here we go. fifth inning rolls around, if I'm going to throw this many breaking balls all game long, I'm going to be gassed. I'm going to wake up. I'm going to feel it the next day.
Yeah.
It's just something about it for me. And some guys, honestly, I started throwing a split, and this is something with Logan Gilbert you're going to see tonight. He's going to throw more splits tonight, just like he did against the Braves. It's a filthy pitch. But you have to learn how do you recover from that pitch. Because the minute, if you put your fingers out, like you're about to throw a fastball, anyone who's listening, the minute you slide those fingers apart, you feel that tension in your forearm. It's an unnatural way to throw a ball, and you're going full speed, and you're not breaking, you're not trying to, you know, lock in your wrist or manipulate the ball. You're just trying to throw as hard as you can. It can be really taxing. So a split is an interesting one as well.
Yeah.
Some guys just can't recover from it.
I just remember that day we were out there for the media event, and you and I were playing catch, and you were trying to show me how to throw a breaking ball, and my arm hurt the next day after.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Just doing that for what? We were out there 15 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it was. But,
for sure.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, Trey Turner heard it from the Philly fans yesterday, including from someone close to him. We'll hear all about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, Ryan Roland Smith in. It's Seattle Sports on 710.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Trey Turner had a bit of a tough game yesterday until the ninth inning. Hit a game-tying two-run homer in the ninth. But the Philly shortstop said he was hearing the boos yesterday, especially from someone close to him.
My mom prepared me for anything in this game or in this world. So she was tough on me from an early age, and not much phases me. So she told me today she was booing me. She actually texted me and said, you know, good game except for your fourth at bat. And I said, yeah, not a good one. And she said, I was booing you. So, yeah, she's why I'm here. One of the reasons why I'm here.
His mom is booing him. How about that?
I like it.
Oh.
That's what they do.
Your parents didn't do that, right? Your dad would just come to the game with his shirt off and yell to you, right?
Hey, I tell you what, my mom was pretty intense, man, with the whole baseball. She was pretty invested. I will say this, like, she came to the game when I was done playing and I was just broadcasting. She's like, oh, this is nice. I can just come to the game and relax. I can actually watch. I don't have to stress out and go stand behind the, you know, leave the seat because she just couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
Stressing out. She was a stress head, yeah. Big time.
Sweeping the dial.
DK Metcalf was on Undisputed with Shannon Sharp and Skip Bayless, your favorites, I know, Bob, yeah. Yesterday morning.
Skip's great.
And he was asked about something that he said last year. So, Ryan, DK Metcalf was on a podcast with Kevin Garnett, and on that podcast, it came out that he eats 3 bags of candy a day. So he had to address that yesterday.
Oh, it's crazy because after that, I did change my
mind. Okay, see, I got it.
I don't eat as much candy as I used to. I still dabble a little bit, though.
Right.
You can't cut it all out at one time, but I still eat a little.
Well, you are burning it off.
Are you a big sweets guy, Ryan?
I am, unfortunately. Look, I have no discipline. If someone walked in this room right now with like just a huge, like, you know, box of those like top pot donuts, whatever they are, it's gone. It's over. You know what I mean?
Now
it's not good. I'm not. Yeah, it's not good.
You're not proud of it. Yeah.
No.
Now, when you were playing, were you somebody that was conscious of your diet? Like, I gotta eat the right things. I gotta get the right sleep. I gotta do that, or were you just like, hey, I'm gonna eat what I want and I'm good?
Yeah, it's kind of more, I'm just going to eat what I want. And hey, when I had a bad year, 2010, I was like stress eating like crazy. I put on like 20 pounds. It was bad.
Oh, really?
Really bad. Oh, yeah, it was bad. Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
But, yeah, I didn't think about it as much then as what I did now. I'm like, man, I used to just crush the worst food ever. What was I thinking?
Maybe if you were like an outfielder or something where you had to do a lot of running, you know, maybe it would have been different. You know, as a pitcher, you're not sprinting.
Well, I used to work out like hard, man. Like I used to love the workouts. It was just, you know, you can't outwork a bad diet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Sweeping the dial.
A couple nights ago in the Yankees-Orioles game, a squirrel got loose and he was running along the fence and kind of near the stands. But the funny part was that it scared a lot of the Yankees fans.
Now, you know who's having a good night or was having a good night? Perched beautifully on the top of the Yankee
bullpen, but then he got loose. Look at the faces on the fans.
In slow motion, don't pick up your phones. You're scared of a squirrel? And that's a
this
squirrel.
Guy's not, though. That guy's not scared.
And now he's become a flying squirrel.
Oh, this is not good.
He sticks a landing much better than we would, I'll tell you that. Like it's nothing. Off to the races.
Did you see the video of that, Ryan?
No, I haven't. I'm trying to search for it as we go, but my computer's...
Yeah, there's a squirrel running across the top of the fence where there's, you know, people are sitting right there. And the looks on the faces of these, they look like they're in their mid-20s. And there's probably, I don't know, four, five, six of them sitting there. And they look like you were in a boat and you saw Jaws. Like, oh my God! They look terrified. It's a squirrel! And the look on their face was absolute horror.
Oh man.
Terror.
I'm watching right now. I'm looking at this going, like, this is just going to circle the internet. And these guys,
look at their faces.
Buddies are going to rip them for sure.
Oh, they look absolutely petrified. It was hilarious. Wow. I'm like, come on, Yankee fans.
Yeah, let's go. Come
Be
on.
Tougher than that.
Yeah, you see some giant rats running around the city? What are you
talking
about? Yes,
you're used to seeing, you know, some sort of creatures running around with, rats everywhere around New York City. You see a cute little squirrel, and they're looking at it like, oh, my God, get it away from me. They look like that would be the look on my face if there were a snake around me. I don't like snakes at all. That would be my face. But a squirrel? Come on, man. Pathetic. Pathetic.
Oh, yeah.
Lefko, are you good with squirrels? Oh, he's probably talking to Morosi there. Squirrel, maybe it could bite you, I suppose. I don't know. I've never been attacked by a squirrel. They've always been sort of cute. We used to feed them in the backyard and stuff. But,
I always do the old, like, because I'm Australian, I'm supposed to, like, be, like, you know, Steve Irwin, the croc hunter, have that background. So if there's an animal around me, I'm always like just acting like it's nothing, in front of Amanda trying to impress her or whatever.
Yeah, inside you, you're like, panicking.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I don't know what that animal's capable of, for sure.
You're supposed to be Steve Irwin. I love it. Everybody's waiting for you to take out your Crocodile Dundee knife and then hack it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you probably are more calm around snakes and whatnot. Isn't there a lot of snakes in Australia?
Well, 7 of the 10 most deadliest snakes in the world come from Australia, Bob.
No.
What does that tell you? I hate snakes. Snakes are brutal.
Now, would they be in your backyard as a kid, like where you'd be playing and stuff?
Yeah, the one culprit that's hanging out in the suburbs is the red-bellied black snake. That thing's big. It's pretty aggressive. I don't want to say too much because someone's going to go on Google red belly black snake and just tell me that I'm wrong on all these facts. But a buddy of mine, my best friend actually, the cat was going nuts at these bushes, and the wildlife guy had to pull out this giant red belly black snake like it was nothing.
Oh.
So yeah, they're pretty bad. The worst is the brown snake. It's tiny, you barely see it, but if you get bit by that thing, you're done. Dunskies. Google that.
I don't want to Google. I don't want to see them. I don't like snakes at all, man. Not cool.
Me too. I hate them. Ugh.
Yeah, I would have left the country immediately. All right. Coming up, our guy John Morosi is going to join us, talk about everything Major League Baseball and the Seattle Mariners. That is coming your way next with Wyman and Bob. Ryan Roland Smith in. This is SeattleSports.com and the Seattle Sports app.